All right, so picture this, right? You've just signed that lease for a brand new apartment. You're feeling good, excited for your new place.
That new apartment smell.
Exactly. It's a good feeling. It's yours, you know, a real sense of security.
Yeah, it's your own space.
Absolutely. But then imagine that feeling just gets completely shattered because your landlord, maybe they overlook something, maybe a simple security thing.
Yeah, a broken lock or something.
Right. Something that allowed a criminal to basically just waltz right in and
Right.
violate that sanctuary you thought you had.
It's awful. Just a nightmare scenario,
It
really.
is, and it's exactly the kind of scenario that we're going to unpack today. We're doing a deep dive into a 1994 Louisiana Supreme Court case,
Ooh, okay.
VZV Elmwood Plantation Associates, LTD.
This case, as you said, is a tough one. It really makes you think about what happens when a landlord, maybe through their own negligence, they create this opening for a crime to happen, you know, an intentional criminal act.
It does. It brings up so many questions about accountability. It's like, can a landlord really be held fully responsible when it was someone else who actually committed the crime?
Right, they didn't assault anyone themselves, but their actions or inactions maybe contributed to it.
Exactly. And I think that's what the Louisiana courts were wrestling with here, this idea of, like, if a landlord's carelessness, let's say, like you said, a broken lock, or maybe there's not enough lighting around the property,
Things like that, yeah.
and that makes it easier for something like a rape, which is what happened in this case, to occur, can they be held fully responsible, even though, again, they weren't the one who committed the actual act?
Tough question, really tough. And the court's decision, as we'll see today, really has some major implications for renters, for landlords, for really anyone who's interested in law, liability, all of that.
Definitely. And luckily for us, we've got a really detailed case brief that we can lean on today. Lays out all those nitty-gritty legal details, and we've got some key excerpts too that I think will highlight those core arguments.
That's going to be helpful.
Yeah, our mission today is to really pull out the key insights from all of this, figure out why this case still matters, you know, all these years later.
Sounds good. I'm ready to dive in.
Okay, let's do it. So where does the story begin? Take us back to the beginning.
Right. So rewind to June 1988. Christy Veazey, she signs a lease at Elmwood Plantation Apartments.
Okay.
Now, things were running smoothly at first. The property, it was initially managed by Tonti Management. But then fairly soon after Miss Veazey moves in, there's a change in management. Southmark Management Corporation, they come in and take over.
Okay, and the change in management, that's actually really significant, right? Because it seems like things shifted quite a bit with Southmark in terms of like the promises they were making about security at the complex.
Absolutely. That's a huge part of this case. According to what we know, Southmark, they allegedly made some pretty specific statements, promises, really, about the security measures in place.
Yeah, and it wasn't just like, you know, a general, oh, don't worry, it's safe here. It was much more detailed than that, right?
What? Oh, way more. They went beyond those vague assurances. They were telling prospective tenants, including Ms. Veazey, that Jefferson Parish Sheriff's deputies, they were regularly patrolling the grounds.
Wow.
Yeah, and on top of that, they seemingly downplayed any past incidents, any crimes that had happened at the property. You can see how that would create a certain expectation in a tenant's mind that,
Absolutely. You
wow.
move in, you're told there are regular patrols, you're not told about any past problems, you'd naturally feel a sense of security.
Exactly, a false sense of security. It's really tragic because that feeling, it's exactly what makes what happened next even more shocking.
Yeah, so let's talk about that. What happened?
All right, so it's October 3rd, 1988, just a few months after Mrs. Veazey moved in. An intruder gets into her second-story apartment. They come in through a bedroom window and brutally assault her.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah, and it's crucial to remember, the rapist was never identified.
That's awful. Just a horrific violation. And obviously, Mrs. Veazey, I mean, she wanted to hold Southmark accountable, so she files a lawsuit against them. And it's important to note here, her lawsuit wasn't just about the fact that a crime happened on their property. It was much more specific than that.
Right. She was alleging negligence on Southmark's part. She actually had two main points in her argument.
Okay, what were they?
First, she cited inadequate security measures, stuff that Southmark was responsible for. Malfunctioning window locks, not enough lighting around the complex.
Things that, yeah, could deter a criminal.
Exactly. And second, she claimed that Southmark, when they took over management, they straight up misrepresented the level of safety and security at Elmwood. Like they were painting this picture of a safe haven, but that picture didn't match reality, and she felt that was fraudulent.
Wow, so it was a pretty strong case against Southmark. So what happened? The case goes to trial, right?
It does, yeah. And the jury, they find Southmark at fault. They award Mrs. Veazey $180,000 in damages. But here's where things take a wild turn. The jury, they said Southmark was 60% responsible. But then, and this is the strange part, they also allocated 40% of the fault to Miss Veazey.
Really?
Yeah, even though in their written responses, they explicitly said she was 0% negligent.
Wait, so they're saying she's not negligent at all, but she's still 40% responsible? That doesn't even make sense.
It really doesn't. It's a total contradiction. And the trial judge, they recognized that right away. They issued something called a judgment notwithstanding the verdict, or a JNOV.
Okay, for those of us who aren't lawyers, what exactly is a JNOV?
Basically, it means the judge overturns the jury's verdict because they feel it wasn't supported by the evidence presented in the trial.
Interesting.
Yeah, so in this case, the judge, they reallocated 100% of the fault to Southmark.
Okay, so Southmark, they're obviously not happy with that outcome, right?
Nope, not at all. They appealed the decision, arguing that the jury's initial fault allocation should stand.
Makes sense.
But the Court of Appeal, they actually upheld the trial court's JNOV. Yeah, they agreed. There was no legal basis to put any blame on Mrs. Veazey.
So at this point, we've got the trial court, the Court of Appeal, both siding with Ms. Veazey. So naturally, this whole thing lands in the lap of the Louisiana Supreme Court.
It does, and that's where we get to the heart of some really fundamental legal arguments about the duty and responsibility of landlords in these kind of scenarios.
Yeah, so we're at the highest court in Louisiana now. What are the big legal questions they're grappling with in this case?
Okay, so there are three major issues they need to address. First, was Southmark legally obligated to provide a certain standard of security to their tenants? And if so, did they fail to do that? Were they negligent in their security measures or in the way they talked about safety at the complex?
Okay, that makes sense.
Second, and this is the tricky one, should fault be allocated not only to Southmark for their negligence, but also to the person who committed the rape? Even though, again, we don't know who that is.
Yeah, that's a really tough one.
It is. Really gets to the heart of things. And then finally, was the trial court right to issue that JNOV and place 100% of the fault on Southmark?
Makes sense. So let's break it down. Starting with the majority opinion, which was written by Justice Kimball.
Right.
What did the court ultimately decide about Southmark's responsibility when it came to security?
Well, the majority opinion was pretty clear. Southmark did have a duty to their tenants. They had to maintain a reasonably safe environment. And part of that meant taking steps to provide security.
Okay, what kind of steps?
Things like making sure window locks worked, making sure the lighting around the property was good enough to deter criminal activity. It's not just about physical stuff, though. They also had a duty to be honest about safety and security at the complex. So the court, they said that by allegedly failing in these areas, both with security measures and being truthful, Southmark breached their duty of care to Mrs. Veazey.
So the court agreed Southmark was negligent. But what about that really complex issue of assigning fault to the rapist who was never identified? That feels like the most controversial part of this whole case.
It is, and this is where the Supreme Court drew a really important line. They said that intentional criminal acts, things like rape, are fundamentally different from negligent acts.
Okay, how so?
Well, they basically said you can't just compare a negligent failure to do something with a deliberate and violent criminal act, especially when you're talking about assigning blame. It's like comparing apples and oranges. The nature of each act is so different that they can't be weighed against each other when you're trying to figure out who's at fault.
Yeah, I mean, ethically, that makes sense to me. There's a huge difference between carelessness and deliberately harming someone. But how did the court justify that legally? How can they say the rapist bears no responsibility, even though they were the one who committed the crime?
They went beyond just the difference between negligence and intent. They talked a lot about public policy, about the bigger picture. The court argued that if landlords were allowed to lessen their responsibility by shifting blame to the criminals, the very people they're supposed to be protecting their tenants from, well, it would just create this loophole. Landlords wouldn't be as motivated to actually invest in and maintain proper security for their tenants.
I see. So it's like, why bother fixing a broken window if you can just say, well, it's the criminal's fault for breaking in?
Exactly. And the court saw that as a slippery slope. They really prioritized this idea that landlords need to be held accountable for creating a safe living environment for their tenants.
So it's not just about what happened in Ms. Veazey's case. It's about setting a standard, a precedent.
Absolutely. And there's a great quote from the majority opinion that really captures this.
Oh, yeah. What is it?
Justice Kimball wrote, "Intentional torts differ in kind, not just degree, from negligence." that sums up their whole argument.
It does. It really highlights that difference in the nature of the acts.
Right. And remember, a tort is just a fancy legal term for a civil wrong that causes harm. It can be negligent or intentional. The court's saying that an intentional tort, like assault, it's not just a more serious version of negligence. It's a completely different animal.
Makes sense. But now we have to remember, this was a split decision. Not all the justices agreed with the majority opinion.
That's right. There were some strong dissenting opinions in this case.
What were the main points of disagreement?
Well, Justice Hall, he acknowledged that Southmark might have been negligent, but he felt their negligence was way less important than the violent act of the rapist.
Yeah, so he disagreed with the level of responsibility placed on Southmark.
He did. He argued that a bigger portion of the blame, something like 90%, should be given to the rapist.
Wow, that's a huge difference.
It is. And then you have Justice Lemon. He took a more general approach. He argued that all types of fault, whether it's negligence or intentional, should be compared equally under Louisiana law.
So he didn't agree with this separation between negligence and intentional acts.
Exactly. He didn't see that fundamental difference that the majority was emphasizing.
Wow. It's interesting to see how differently the justices interpreted the law here.
Yeah, and it's not uncommon. This case, it highlights a tension that often comes up in legal systems. Like, how do you balance specific responsibilities, like this duty a landlord has to provide security, with these broader principles of fairness and shared fault? You know, when harm occurs, who's to blame and how much? It's a big question. And this case gives us a glimpse into how legal minds grapple with that.
It does. And it sounds like there's this idea of comparative fault that plays a role here.
Right. So comparative fault, generally, it's about splitting responsibility when multiple parties contribute to some harm, right? Like if two drivers are being careless and cause a car accident. The question here is, does an intentional criminal act fit into that same model? Can you really compare it to, say, a driver making a mistake? That's where the disagreement lies.
It's a fascinating legal debate for sure.
It is. Oh, and it's also worth mentioning Justice Watson's opinion.
Okay, what did he have to say?
Well, he agreed with the majority that Southmark was fully liable for the damages Mrs. Veazey suffered.
Mm-hmm.
But he also stated very clearly, the rapist is 100% at fault.
So even though he agreed with the outcome, he had a different way of looking at the responsibility of the individual who committed the crime.
Exactly. Even among those who agreed on the final decision, there were different views on how to frame the moral and legal responsibility.
Right. So we have this clear divide. The majority focused on the landlord's specific duty, this public policy need to incentivize safety, while the others were concerned about maintaining a consistent and fair application of these comparative fault principles.
Right. And it just underscores how complex these cases are, where you have negligence and intentional acts all tangled up.
It does. It really does. So let's shift gears a bit and talk about the broader implications of this case, the Veazey decision. It really seems like it had a big impact on Louisiana law, right?
Absolutely. For landlords and property owners, it was a wake-up call. It reinforced that legal responsibility they have to ensure that their security measures actually match what they promise tenants.
Right. So you can't just say you have great security and then not deliver.
Exactly. And the court made it much harder for landlords to argue that they shouldn't be fully liable when their negligence contributes to a crime against a tenant.
So for tenants, this was a huge win, right?
It was. It really emphasized that they can't be held responsible or blamed for crimes that happen because a landlord failed to maintain a reasonably safe environment. It goes back to that duty of care that landlords have.
Yeah. Remind us what that means again.
Sure. So duty of care basically means that landlords have this responsibility to take reasonable steps to keep their property safe for their tenants.
What kind of steps?
Things like making sure the locks are working, the lighting is good, stuff like that. It's about taking those basic steps to prevent foreseeable harm.
Right. And that includes preventing crimes, especially when their negligence could make those crimes more likely to happen.
Absolutely. So it's not just about Mrs. Veazey's case. It's about setting a precedent for how these situations are handled in the future.
Exactly. So Veazey v. Elmwood, it wasn't just about this one tragic incident. It established a legal precedent in Louisiana regarding how landlord liability is handled in these situations.
It did. And that precedent is huge. It essentially says you can't automatically reduce a negligent party's liability by just blaming the person who committed the intentional act.
Okay, can you explain that a bit more?
Sure. So in this case, it means that even though a criminal committed the rape, you can't just say, well, it's their fault, so the landlord's off the hook. The court said that's especially true when the negligent party, the landlord, had a duty to prevent that act from happening in the first place.
That makes a lot of sense. It's about holding landlords accountable for their role in creating a safe environment.
It is. It's a really crucial part of premises liability law in Louisiana. It really defines the responsibilities that property owners have to their tenants.
And for our listeners out there, especially anyone who's renting or thinking about renting, this case is a huge reminder of your rights as a tenant. You have the right to expect a certain level of safety and security when you sign a lease. It's not just about the physical space itself. It's about those security measures that should be in place, the steps a landlord should be taking to protect you from foreseeable harm, and that includes criminal activity that their negligence might make easier.
Absolutely, and this all goes back to that key difference between negligence and an intentional crime.
Right. Walk us through that one more time.
Okay, so negligence is when someone is careless and unintentionally causes harm. Like a landlord not fixing a broken lock, but a crime like rape, that's an intentional act. There's a deliberate choice to cause harm. The court really focused on that difference when making their decision.
Yeah, that distinction is at the heart of this whole case.
It is, and the court's message is clear. Landlords can't just ignore security issues and then claim it's all the criminal's fault when something bad happens.
There has to be some accountability on their part.
Exactly. The Veazey case, it acknowledges that shared responsibility. If a landlord's negligence helps a crime happen, they can be held accountable.
Wow, this has been such an insightful deep dive and really makes you think about how important it is to create a safe environment for everyone, especially when you're providing housing.
It does, and it raises some really important questions for all of us to think about.
Yeah, what are some of those questions?
Well, here's one for our listeners to ponder. How do you balance a landlord's responsibility for security with the fact that criminal acts are, by nature, unpredictable? Where do you draw that line? And is holding a negligent landlord fully liable for the harm caused by an intentional crime, like the court did in Veazey, is that going too far? Or is it absolutely necessary to make sure landlords are prioritizing tenant safety?
That's a great question to leave our listeners with, something for them to think about.
It is. And this whole deep dive into Veazey v. Elmwood, it really gives us a glimpse into the complexities of tort law. It shows us how courts try to balance individual rights with these bigger public policy goals.
Absolutely. And maybe, for those who are interested, they can look into how other courts across the U.S. have handled similar situations.
Yeah, like, do they also resist putting any blame on the criminal when a landlord's negligence might have contributed to a crime against a tenant?
Really interesting questions. And it's clear this case, even though it happened back in 1994, it still has a lot to teach us about landlord liability, tenant safety, and the role of the courts in all of this.
Absolutely. It's a case that continues to resonate.
Thanks for this great deep dive.
My pleasure. Always a good discussion.
It is. It is. And for our listeners, we'll catch you next time for another deep dive.
See you then.
All right. Take care.
You too.